Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am your host, one of your hosts, one of many of your hosts, Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always...
I am another one of the many hosts as well. Is it really episode 23? I feel we missed 22. What happened in episode 22?
Lots of stuff happened in 22.
Is that the one we called Joel?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, see, we're so professional that we have a week already in the can.
We've got the buffer.
Yeah. We've got a buffer. So if, you know, I decide to run away and move to New Mexico or something.
Seems lucky.
There's plenty of podcast goodness to keep the fans appeased. So we don't go for long whiles without podcasts anymore. Anyway, all that aside, how are you, Ben Chandler?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm great. What have you been up to?
I've been working, and I've been playing games, and I've been working on games. So I feel it's so, a Venn diagram with, you know, games, work, yeah. And then in the middle a little bit of game work.
Good.
Yeah. So, and what have you been up to?
Well, I've been unemployed, which, judging from the looks of things, is not going to be the case very much longer. Let's cross our fingers. And
you've got a job lined up.
I've got a prospect lined up is what I've got.
Well, prospect job, same thing.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, I've been working on my game as well. I've finally managed to finish coding chapter 2. Actually, during this podcast, I will be coding the last cutscene of chapter 2 so that the first two chapters will be fully playable, and therefore my game will be 50% playable, which is
right.
It's a bit of an exciting milestone.
If you hear typing noises, for once it won't be me playing games.
Yeah, it'll be me making a game.
Although I can't guarantee that I won't be playing games during the duration of this podcast. Anyway, so what games have you been playing?
Yeah, speaking of playing games.
Speak of fairly regularly.
Yeah, it really is. You'd think that we wouldn't, this being such a serious, you know, car podcast.
Yes. Vroom.
Vroom. Good. Anyway, I should preface this with a story. Last weekend, which...
Oh, I love stories, yes!
I know, and I love boring you with them. Especially ones you've heard already, because I've told them to you.
Have you?
Yes. So, this past weekend, I went out, I took a train... And I went to the mysterious faraway land known as Long Island.
Right,
or
it's the same city.
Well, sort of, technically speaking. Or as the locals call it, Long Island. So right. I was out on Long Island, and the reason that I went out there...
Please refer to it from now on as Long Island.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. Okay. So the reason I went out to Long Island... was because I was invited by our mutual Twitter friend, Anna. Well, he's a real life friend now for me. But,
and I've done a podcast with him, and a tie does not get closer than that, than I'm doing a podcast with someone.
You're absolutely right. So,
Hey, buddy.
Hey, bro, what's up?
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your amazing story.
It wasn't really an amazing story. The point is, I went out to visit Anatoly Shaskin, who is DOS nostalgic, and who we've mentioned quite a bit lately on this podcast, because he's got his ear to the ground when it comes to old games, if that makes any sense.
He knows a lot of old games, is what you're trying to say.
He really does.
He's played a lot of DOS games and Windows games. Yeah.
Right, So he invited me to his place, and we went and explored an old abandoned psychiatric hospital, which was pretty fun. But
just like an adventure game.
Exactly. Well, actually more like a stealth game, because we were kind of hiding from the police, but still.
As you do when you're in an old abandoned hospital.
Yeah, when you're trespassing on private property, that tends to... Yeah. Anyway, so before we went out, Anatoly was showing me a couple of games that I had never seen before, including Callahan's Cross Time Saloon.
Yeah, right, sure.
And he also showed me a couple of the Tex Murphy games, which I've actually never played before.
No, I've never played a Tex Murphy game, but Igor Hardy has told me I should play at least one of them.
Yeah, so. he showed me Under a Killing Moon, which looked pretty interesting.
I think that's the one Igor said is the best, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And so yeah, it was cool, but then we were also talking about games and we went out drinking afterwards and we were sitting at a bar like two nerds talking about games while the pretty young barmaids were hanging around and dancing to pop music, and I was kind of like, "Hey baby, check out my adventure game collection." Which really was not what I was doing. Oh man,
worst scenario possible.
I didn't tell you this bar had an old-timey popcorn machine in it.
Oh man, I love popcorn.
I know, but they didn't give us any popcorn, which made me sad.
Well, I would have asked for some popcorn.
Yeah, but it was probably extra, and I didn't feel like paying extra for popcorn. Oh.
You can only ask. I would have said, "Excuse me, is that complimentary popcorn?"
Yeah, you're right. Anyway,
because
so
I'm shameless and I love popcorn.
Yes. So we were sitting at the bar talking about games, and we were talking about Cocktail Vision and how many wonderful games that they've made.
Were you sitting in a cocktail bar?
No. You hush now.
Okay.
So we were talking about their games and how a lot of them have sadly faded into obscurity, but that there's still, you know, many ones that people still know. And of course, Woodruff and the Schnibble came up.
An old favorite of mine,
and I remember that it's been several years since I played it, so I pulled out my copy of The Bizarre Adventures of Woodruff and the Schnibble, and I loaded it up and was pleased to find that it runs perfectly in ScumVM. And so that's what I've been playing lately.
As it should.
And it's just as difficult as I remembered it being.
It's a cocktail-vision game.
Yeah, I've played through it about twice in my lifetime, and I don't remember very much about it, but it still holds up to this day, and it's still a lot of fun, and it's very silly. It has a very distinct cocktail vision French sense of humor.
Like all cocktail vision games that I've played, which isn't a lot.
Yeah.
I keep meaning to play Ween the Prophecy.
Oh man, you need to play Ween the Prophecy.
It's on the list.
That is definitely a game that I'm really looking forward to seeing what your reaction to is. So what have you been playing?
I've been playing a few different games. I was out most of last weekend, well, all of last weekend, doing music stuff. But I've been playing some Heroes of Might and Magic 2. I've always meant to try a Heroes of Might and Magic game. I've obviously played Might and Magic games before, but I never tried a Heroes of Might and Magic game before. So I started playing number 2 and got fairly addicted to it. I've played quite a bit of Heroes of Might and Magic 2 lately, and it's amazing. It's phenomenal. I'm not sure how I can describe it except a mix. Like, if you got the Might and Magic games and mixed them with Civilization or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're great. They're great.
I remember, like I told you, I remember playing the demo, but the demo is missing a key feature that is prevalent in the full version. Why don't you tell us about that?
My favorite option. Now, there's a couple of different options. You know, you've got graphics options, you've got gameplay options, you've got audio options, and one of the audio options allows you to change the music of the game. And there's a couple of different settings. There's the MIDI music, and then there's the CD music. But the CD music comes in two different formats.
Really?
And one of the formats is CD music with opera, and one of them is CD music without opera. And I want you to take a wild guess now, right now, which of these options I chose.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you chose the CD audio with opera.
Hell yes, I did.
And man, you'd be a fool not to.
Yeah, it is phenomenal. I think next time we do top scores, I'm going to try and see if I can find some of that CD audio with opera and throw that in, because it absolutely delighted me. It delighted me so much that I was on the Skype to you and said, "You have to listen to this."
Yeah.
Because it's while you're playing Might and Magic. It's phenomenal. It's just sensational. You're exploring this big magic world of strange creatures and, you know, wondrous artifacts and attacking cities, and there's catapults and ballista, and in the background there's this cheesy opera, and it's just divine. Absolutely divine. I've also been playing Star Wars Dark Forces. I don't think we talked about that last podcast, so.
No, I don't think we mentioned it. Well, actually, I think you may have mentioned it, but please mention it again.
Well, I have finished Star Wars Dark Forces and really enjoyed it. Great game. I remember playing it, like I said, I hadn't played it for years. It'd probably been 10 years or 15 years since I last played Dark Forces. So, you know, really, I really, really, really enjoyed it. It's good. And I found the last level quite not challenging. See, Dark Forces has this thing where you don't have save games. You have lives and you unlock levels. So you've only got a limited amount of lives to finish a level. So some of the levels took me a couple of playthroughs. But, I mean, it's the old school of gaming where, you know, you can't quick save cheat your way through a level. You have to learn the level and you have to learn the combat. And, yeah, it's good. It's all good.
Okay.
I also finished my playthrough of Kyrandia 2, Hand of Fate.
Ah, yes.
And I have to say, it's one of the best adventure games I've ever played.
Yeah, really, it's really a good one.
Yeah, I really, 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 really like that. Some of the nicest... Well, probably... I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the prettiest adventure game I've ever played.
It's pretty pretty.
It's very, very pretty. I mean, I love stuff like Full Throttle. I love stuff like Simon the Sorcerer. You know, they're all very pretty games, but there's something about Westwood's pixel art, Westwood's low res, that just phenomenal. And I'm a little disappointed that they canned the pixel art for the third game. But I'm going to play it anyway, because the first
they two... Didn't, they canned the pixel art for the backgrounds, but the character sprites are still pixely. Yeah. They're just bigger.
But the backgrounds is where it's at, man. Westwood
back. Yeah, yeah. I know.
Oh, man. And Kyrandia 1 was pretty, but Kyrandia 2 was phenomenal. I took so many screenshots. More than 50.
Yeah, wow. Mm. Actually, speaking of the sprite work, here's something that I've always kind of noticed in The Hand of Fate and, well, just Kyrandia.
Xanthia changes her clothes like 10 times during the game.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that her sprite reminds me of a sprite of another female character in another game.
And is it one in the LucasArts game?
Yes, it is, and it's always made me wonder. What's that?
I thought it might be.
It always made me wonder if. Because I don't remember which game came first, but it always makes me wonder if maybe there was some sort of paint, not paint over necessarily, but if there was some sort of maybe inspiration drawn.
Yeah, there's only so many pixels you can, there's only so many, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's
such
true.
A small region of pixels.
Yeah, but do you have an idea where I'm going with this?
I might have an idea where you're going with this.
Please tell me.
Well... are you thinking of Elaine?
No, I'm actually not thinking.
Are you thinking of an Indiana Jones game then?
Yes, I am.
There you go. Well, it was going to be one of the two, wasn't it? Obviously, it wasn't going to be Laverne.
Yeah, I guess. No, it wasn't. It wasn't
as much,
be Laverne.
I have to say, as much as I love Laverne because of her crazy eye and her tentacle suit, her tentacle suit is pretty much the hottest thing ever. It's just pure sex, man.
You got problems, boy.
I got something.
Yeah, keep that to yourself.
Okay, you're showing me a picture of Sophia. Yeah, I sort of see it.
Showing you a picture of Sophia, and then I'm going to show you a picture. And this is completely ridiculous, considering that this is an audio podcast.
Hmm.
But if you get a chance...
Is it the blue eye pixel?
Listeners,
it's probably the blue eye pixel.
I think it might be the blue eye pixel as well as just the general facial construction and hair.
Well, there's about 9 pixels there.
Yeah, I know. It's mostly in the side view. But if you if you dear listeners want to check it out for yourself, check out Sophia Hapgood and then check out Xanthia. And it's actually only in the side view of Xanthia now that I'm looking at it, because her sort of three-quarter view standard thing is not really... It doesn't really look like Sophia. But, and this is a terrible example too, but if you look at this screenshot at her side there, it kind of looks the same. If you squint and turn your head.
Yeah, only just. Only just the slightest little bit, but I see your point.
Yeah. In any case.
Elaine's head is not shaped that much differently either, to be honest.
Yeah, true.
There's only so many pixels you've got at that sort of resolution. You know.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yes, Kyrandia 2, Phenomenal game. Absolutely phenomenal. Everyone here listening should play it. It's now on GOG.com. So if you feel like, you know, you've never played it, you've missed out, you need to get a copy, you can get a copy from there. You can also get Carindia 1 from there. And no doubt they'll be putting Carindia 3 up there in the next week or so.
Probably. Because
that's how GOG work. So, yeah, there you go. So that's another good game. I think I've been playing a couple of other games, but nothing major to talk about. I got a couple of games in the mail. I'm currently wearing a Last of Us t-shirt. The last of, it says, it's got four words on it. The first one is the second one is last, and then there's two words on a single column, which is of and us.
I so, see. What a cleverly designed shirt that is.
It almost like it's trying to bring a message across. I ordered a copy of Tomb Raider. Because I already have the original Tomb Raider, obviously, but I ordered a copy of the new Tomb Raider and The Last of Us because I saw them both going very cheap on an online store that I occasionally buy from. And The Last of Us came with a t-shirt, as I found out when I got the package, so I'm now wearing that t-shirt.
Good.
Because it was close to my bed and I'm lazy. So I'm like, t-shirt, put it on.
Well, good on you for putting a t-shirt on at all. I wouldn't have.
Well, I was a little cool. My legs are still unencumbered with clothing.
You'll excite the fans talking like that.
Man, we want them excited. We want them Man, interested.
What am I doing with pants still on? Honestly.
Yeah, la ropa no es requerida.
Yeah, let's liberate this podcast of any inhibitions. Let's do this. All right.
This is
adios, pantalones.
Adios, yes. Pantalones.
All right. Anyway.
Anyway,
actually, it's funny you mentioned your acquisition of these games because
I
was
because
quite...
as soon as I got them, you went and said, oh, I need those as well. Let me look. If you got them cheap, I can get them cheap.
Exactly. Because all this time, as I've mentioned several times, I've been abstaining from purchasing video games because of the fact that, you know, I've had some big expenses this year and I don't have as of the past 6 months I've been unemployed and I've tried to be
have
responsible.
Have you really been unemployed for 6 months?
I've been unemployed for over 6 months, actually. Well, no, that's not true because I did freelance work when I came back from Australia, so...
there's a couple of months there.
Yeah, but considering I haven't been paid yet, I might as well have been unemployed for 6 months.
You got paid for some of it.
Yeah, so, I got paid for 1/8 of it.
Okay, so you can buy 1/8 of the games you want.
Sure. Yeah, but anyway, since I knew I was moving to New York and I was going to have all these extra expenses, you know, rent and furniture and all this stuff, I decided that I should be responsible. I mean, it's not that I can't afford it. I thought that I should be responsible because as anyone who knows me knows, I'm terrified of being in debt in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Even if it's just like having... you know, an outstanding balance on my credit card. I'm just like, I gotta pay this and I gotta get it out of the way. So
yeah, I'm exactly the same. I don't do, after 3 years working at a bank, I don't do borrowing money now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So I had been putting off buying these games because it takes a really long time for games to get a price drop, especially if they're popular. I mean, The Last of Us was critically acclaimed, and I'm sure...
So was Tomb Raider.
Yeah. So, I had looked, and I hadn't seen any significant price drops, which made it them worth buying. Even on GameStop, they were still pre-owned. They were still, like, $39.99. So, I figured...
Wow.
Yeah. And... yeah. So, the only game I've bought full price this year, as you know, is Rayman Legends, which I still haven't finished.
And which I have abstained from buying so far.
Yeah, well, for how long?
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, so yeah, I had the brilliant idea of checking on eBay, because I figured if I can get them somewhere for cheap, it'll probably be eBay. So I managed to pick up God of War Ascension, which honestly I had no real interest in playing, but I figured if I can get it for cheap, I might as well. So I got that for...
So you are turning into me.
No, it's just I did have an interest in playing it. I couldn't justify paying full price for it because I wasn't that interested in it.
Yeah, I would say I'm interested in playing every game ever. So there's my problem.
Well, yeah, I'm not. I have a bit more of a discriminatory palette for games. But anyway, I got God of War Ascension for less than $30, which was good. And then I got Tomb Raider. Well, that's a funny story, actually.
There's a story.
I ended up with two copies of Tomb Raider because I started bidding on one that I figured I was going to get outbid on because I did get outbid on it. I bid $25. Someone bid $26. I bid $27. I thought, I'll get outbid. There's 4 hours left in this auction. So I had a little browse, and I saw that someone was selling it, buy it now, with free shipping for $19.99. And I thought, it's not going to get any better than this. So I bought it now. And lo and behold, I didn't get outbid on the auction, so I ended up getting two copies. So I have another one of my copies on sale.
So you spent $47 on a $20 game.
Yeah, but I'm hoping to recover my $27 from one of the sales of the game.
Or so. At least some of the $27.
Yeah, exactly. So, I've got those on the way.
Well, I've got two copies of Tomb Raider as well.
Really?
Except one's a Tomb Raider and one's Tomb Raider. Released, like, you know, 20 years apart or something.
Oh, of course. Hilarious.
Actually, I've got two copies of the first Tomb Raider, because one's Tomb Raider Anniversary, which is the remade version. So, you know.
Yes. Whatever. Now, let me ask you a question.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Actually, it's more of a request for you to tell a story to our adoring fans.
Do I have any stories worth telling in my life?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You do.
Good.
Because we've been prattling on about games for the past 20 minutes or so.
I like games.
I know, I like games too. But we let's break up this monotony of talking about games a bit. And you mentioned that actually it does have to do with games. But you mentioned that last weekend you were busy because you were doing music.
Yeah.
And it's you know, for those people who don't know you, don't know your life, there's an annual event at in the area where you live, in the town near where you live, which they have every year, and it's a big concert venue that lasts all day, and it's a bachelors and spinsters thing.
Yeah, it's basically a big party.
Right, it's
where
a big
everyone
party.
Gets filthy and, you know,
yeah, and they jump in the mud and they do burnouts in cars and they,
yeah, and they take all their clothes off and run through the mud pit and all, you know, all the, there's lots of alcohol and nudity and filth and all this. It's basically our own Woodstock festival.
Right, exactly. But this year was special because this year you guys had a big name come to.
Yeah, we had a fairly big name band come to the venue. They're an Australian band called Eskimo Joe, who are fairly well known. But yeah, so we invited them. And they came along, and that was pretty fun.
Yeah, but then also your band played as your band.
My band played. Yeah, we played. We had a good time.
And two things that I think you should mention. One is your wardrobe, and the second is the special event that you had.
The special event that I had, is this while I'm playing?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have a t-shirt. It's in the podcast thread. You can go and find it. I have a t-shirt which is the Verb Coin, the user interface from Full Throttle, LucasArts Full Throttle, which is an amazingly sort of relevant looking t-shirt for a rock and roll guitarist / singer to play, to wear, not play, it's not a guitar. And yeah, so it's got, you know, it's got skulls and fists in a glove and a big leather boot on it, and it's, you know, the word, you know,
polecats.
So it's like this real biker shirt. So I'm like, well, I'm playing to a big rock and roll crowd, so I'm gonna, you know, what am I gonna throw over these jeans? Because earlier in the day I was wearing my Nuka Cola t-shirt because I like to rock the DOS games, sort of, you know. And for those of you who are a Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas fan, know that Fallout was originally also released for DOS, the original Fallout, back in 1997. And fantastic game. If you like Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, Francisco, you should go and play the original Fallout. You can get that also on GOG, I believe.
Why'd you name check me?
Because you have played Fallout 3 and New Vegas and yet have not played the first Fallout.
Can I just say that I actually started a new game of Fallout New Vegas the other night?
Mm-hmm.
And I made a character. I made a character based on Bryan Cranston's character in Breaking Bad. I made Heisenberg.
Oh my god!
And you know why I did that? Because there's two scenes in a couple of episodes where he puts on his pork pie hat and his Heisenberg outfit, and they play this mysterious music, and it's one note off from the Fallout theme.
Wow.
So I was like, it made my brain work that way. But anyway, I'm deviating from your story, which is your rock and roll biker story.
Yeah, so basically I played loud, excited rock and roll to and do you know what song we opened with?
What was it? Was it Semi-Charmed Life?
By Third Eye Blind, yes it was. I was like, man, this is just like doing a podcast. So I wore that. And also, for the very last song, which we played Let There Be Rock by AC/DC, because you're playing to a crowd of basically AC/DC fans. That is our entire crowd.
Sure.
During the last solo, we extended the break between one part of the solo and the key change up from the A to the B, and we got our friend Jeff to ride his Harley Davidson up on the stage. I was wearing a balaclava and a gas mask at this point. And he came up on the stage, which is our stage, you know, it's all our area. We set it up. And he did a nice big burnout on his Harley Davidson, which is the best smoke machine in the world. I've played on stages with like 10 smoke machines, which have been inferior to what this man created with his Harley Davidson back tire. It was phenomenal. And the crowd went wild. And then there was flamethrowers and fireworks and all the crap that comes along with doing a big rock and roll show, you know.
Yeah, if that's not rock and roll, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and the best thing was the crowd was full of people. They have this little trick that they do to each other where everybody gets water pistols and water guns and they fill them up with water and food dye. This is a common thing, and they spray each other with these. So it's all like, it's like playing to a throng of blue and green faced zombies. It's fantastic, and all their clothes are stained, and you know, it's just phenomenal. And you can't see much of it because there's obviously spotlights in your eyes, and that's how it goes. But I always get them to hold their cans of beer up, and so there's, you know, a thousand shining cans, the sea of shining cans out, and the things that are reflecting the spotlights, which is always a lovely sight. I really like that. So yeah,
Is it 4X?
No, it's all sorts. It's all sorts. Yeah, okay. But yeah, so that was my weekend. That was fun.
Good.
And yeah, I got to rock the adventure game shirts, a bit of Fallout first with a bit of role-playing game.
Good.
From DOS era, and then a little bit of Full Throttle, which is probably the most appropriate thing. And one of my Twitter followers asked me if I played the Full Throttle, the Gone Jackals song, the opening theme on guitar.
Sure.
When I walked down the stage, I was really sad that I didn't, because I know how to play it.
Yeah.
And I really should have, because that would have been amazing.
Yeah, it would have been. But, oh well. There's always next year.
There's always next year. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, there's that.
You had a good weekend of music and biking and rock and roll.
Absolutely worn out at the end, because I'm a head roadie, and I had two stages to set up.
And pack up.
Worn out.
And I had a nice weekend of trespassing and DOS games and...
We're like fucking... I don't even know what we are, man. We're like renegades. We're something else.
I don't know. We should be out like kicking over stands of things and breaking into houses.
Well, I kick things over regularly.
Okay.
That's what I do.
You know what you should totally do? You should wear your Polecat shirt and you should like walk up to things and tap on the boot and then kick things, or tap on the hand and then like, you know.
I'm not putting my lips on that.
Exactly. Exactly. I was wearing my Assassin's Creed Ezio shirt underneath my my sweater when I went out to the psychiatric place, just to kind of get in the mood for free running and stuff.
I just realized how nerdy we are.
Well, of course we are. Jesus.
Just then when you told me about wearing the Assassin's Creed shirt, that just suddenly this just struck
a light bulb.
I was just like, holy shit, we're absolute nerds.
I'm sorry that it took you this long to realize that.
Wow.
I mean, come on.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Sorry.
Wow. Man, what nerds we are. That's amazing.
I know.
We're basically cosplaying. I feel like we're the guys that go out to the park with foam swords and shields and, like, pretend and mock battle.
I don't think we're at the LARP era yet.
Oh, we're close. That's it. LARP. Live action role playing.
Yeah. We're not quite there yet, I don't think.
Money is a major issue.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
That was. I was just.
Bum 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 ba dum. You want some ice cream?
Delicious.
No one knows what we're talking about.
A little bit more like gelato.
But remember, oh Jesus! Remember when we were in Byron and we rented the bicycles?
Yeah, that was great.
And we were riding around, and I was doing the Full Throttle music.
That was great.
And you were leading us, and I was like, "Look, it's Ben. He's the leader."
Yeah, man. I felt like I was like you and Ryan were my wingmen.
We were like your polecats.
Yeah, man. That was phenomenal.
You know,
I needed.
You know what I regret?
A limo to jump.
Yeah, you know what I regret about that day the most is that I never got around to taking a picture of the three of us posing with the bikes like we were tough bikers.
That would have been phenomenal because those bikes were sensational.
I know they had streamers on them. Well, actually, did they? I don't remember. They were old. They had little bells on them, which was awesome because. Yes, that is great.
Well, I think bicycles are required to have bells here in Australia, so you can notify pedestrians of your presence.
Oh, okay. Well,
safety. It's not awesomeness. It's a safety feature. It's very. I say, rip them off, throw them away, discard them. You don't see Ben Throttle riding his motorcycle with a helmet on, do you?
No, and they made us wear helmets.
Yes.
Actually, you know,
they tried to make us, but we just agreed because we're tough. We don't need helmets, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know what they have here in New York, which I haven't tried yet, is Citibank has these bicycle rental stands all over the city, Citibike. And basically what you do is you pay a certain amount of money and you get the bike for 24 hours. You have to check in every hour, I think, or every certain amount of time. You have to return the bike to a stand and get a new one, which I think is kind of strange. But there's one small problem with that I find that I haven't, which is one of the main reasons I haven't gotten around to do it, is I think you have to be kind of nuts to go cycling in New York City, especially in Manhattan, because you will probably get hit.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. Keep
it to Byron Bay is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, if you're brave, and I guess if you have good insurance, you can do it in New York, but I mean, yeah. They don't make you wear helmets, which is crazy.
Really? And, here it is against the law to ride a bicycle without a helmet on.
Oh no, here you can ride motorcycles without helmets here.
In New York?
Anywhere in the United States. Well, lots of places in the United States. I know that in Florida you could ride without a helmet.
That is reprehensibly unsafe. Are you allowed to drive without your seatbelt on?
No, because you get a ticket. Click it or Hang ticket.
On. Hang on. You're allowed to drive without a seatbelt on, and yet
allowed to drive without a seatbelt on,
and
but
yet
you're allowed
to ride a motorcycle without a helmet on.
Yeah.
That is a very, very odd safety double standard, my friend.
Yep, I know, but I'm not the one that makes the laws, and I don't live in Florida anymore, so.
Did I tell you I got a Coley Motors sticker? I'm going to put it on my little folder of game notes and passwords and stuff.
You didn't. Have I ever told you I have a Brutal Legend patch?
Yes. I don't have a Brutal Legend patch.
I've never figured out what to do with it, though.
Put it on a jacket.
But I like my leather jacket just the way it is.
Well, buy a jacket, a cheap one from, like, a thrift store to be your Brutal Legend jacket.
Okay, I'll do that.
There you go. Look, this is Advice Hour with Ben 304. Tell me your problem.
But go ahead.
Before we started this podcast, you told me that there was something you wanted to talk about that you discussed recently with Darth Helmet 86,
who's
a mutual friend of ours, and we've stayed at his place and teased his son.
Yes, yes, we have.
Who's awesome. James is great. Hi, James.
Hi, James. I was having a conversation with him the other day, and we were talking about games and, you know, as you do. And mainly we were talking about the Gabriel Knight remake. And,
sure.
Well, we mentioned the Gabriel Knight remake. And we were just talking about games and interactivity and stuff like that. And he brought up a couple of interesting points, which I wanted to discuss with you and see what your opinion on them was.
I disagree with all of them.
Well, you've
just because I'm a rebel without a cause.
Uh-huh. More like rebel without your claws, you cat. Anyway, so you've played several adventure games.
I've played one or two, yes.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you've played Sierra Adventure games.
I've played one or two, yes.
Mm-hmm. You've played Parser adventure games, yes?
I have played one or two, yes.
Okay. So
I'm not committing. I've played text adventures. I've gone beyond Parser adventures.
Oh, well, sure. I've played text adventures, too. Yeah. Okay, so let's take into account the Parser system in text adventures and the early AGI things.
So for those of you that have never played them, it's like the original King's Quest, you know, that sort of stuff where you type out your actions.
If there's people who are listening to this podcast that haven't played Parser games, that makes me really sad.
Well,
not only because
people that listen to our podcast, and young people may not have played King's Quest ever.
Young people shouldn't listen to our podcast. Our podcast is for people aged 21 and over.
In case we say words like breasts.
Yeah, or vagina.
The interesting thing about breasts is when you're a child, you're required to feed from them, and as soon as you get to a certain age, they go, no, you can't even look at them now.
Yeah, that's an interesting double standard.
Yeah, and as for the, I won't even go.
With the vagina?
Where you spend 9 months, you know.
Well, you don't spend 9 months in there. You spend 9 months in the uterus.
Yes, but then you spend 9 months in the uterus, and then you know, you pass out. You don't pass out. You don't black out. You enter the world via the female gateway.
Well, not all of us do. I didn't.
No. Okay, right. Well, but you know what I mean.
My head was too big. There's a fun fact for all of you. My head was too big, so I was a C-section.
Oh, man, I was as well. I nearly killed my mother, poor thing.
Oh, dear. That's not good.
But she's alive.
Good. Yes, she is. And
you
she
met her. You know her.
She cooked me steak.
Yeah, delicious.
Delicious. Anyway.
And my grandma made biscuits for you. Did you eat my grandma's biscuits? They're delicious.
No, she didn't make biscuits for me.
I pretty much introduced you to my whole family. You should be like the size of a whale.
Why?
Man, if I take you around visiting my family, oh man, every time I go visit anyone, they're like, Ben, you have to eat more, eat more, eat more, eat more. Eat
well,
more.
That's my family too.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're getting
totally veered off topic here.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear about our stupid personal lives.
Ooh.
Anyway, so comparing the Parser interfaces with the modern, even the Sierra, you know, icon system, or just like the two-click interface in modern games now, or any variation of those. What do you think that does for interactivity? Do you think because there's two sides of the coin if you look at it. I was considering as a player and as a designer.
Yeah.
What do you think? Tell me what you think.
This is actually something that I once debated with somebody for over an hour.
Oh, wow. Well, we got time. The night
So my argument is, well, I wouldn't say argument, but my position on this issue is that with a parser system, your list of verbs not only becomes near infinite. I won't say near infinite because there's only a finite number of words that you can use. But, you know, the amount of verbs you can offer the player, whether they know it or not, whether they realize they're there or not, is much, much, much greater. You know, you can add things in that you could never do with the sort of nine verb style, that you could never really successfully do with a verb coin style. Imagine clicking on a hotspot or an object in an adventure game and having to scroll through a list of 99 verbs each time.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Mm-hmm. Or even if you've got a verb coin sort of set up, and you want 17 different things that a player can do with a single hotspot, that's going to be very unwieldy to navigate. Whereas in a text system, where you type out what you want to do as a player, as a designer, it's so quick and easy to have someone type out, you know, dance on couch. We can dance on couch. I typed it out then, and you saw how long that took me. That was very, you know, we type every day. We are used to typing. We are typists by nature. You know, the modern generation. So typing something out is not difficult at all for us. It's totally intuitive. We know where all the commands are. It's just a matter of pressing them in the right order. So it's really...
Ooh, sorry to interrupt you there real quick, but can you type without looking at the keyboard?
Absolutely, man. I can type without having a keyboard there. I used to lie in bed as a teenager and think of the keys on the keyboard. Like, I'd think of a word and just think of where I'd type it.
Man, what a nerd.
Yeah, I am.
But I can do the same thing, so...
Oh, man, people hate me because I can write an email and look at them and talk to them at the same time as I'm writing an email out. People hate me for that, but yeah. So
it seems like a pretty petty thing to inspire hatred, but hey.
Well, people are petty. So yeah. So my
especially argument, Tom Petty.
Yeah. Man, I'm heartbroken. my thing is, as a designer... The freedom you can not only give yourself as a designer, but give the player as someone who is interacting with the world that you've built is just phenomenal. Have you ever built a parser-based game or a text-based game? I know you've done one as a little joke game, but have you ever tried doing one seriously?
No.
Okay. It is very...
Because of the experience I had with that little joke game.
Well, that was something. My very first game ever... was on a TI-83 calculator, so that doesn't count. But once I've stopped programming on TI-83 calculators, I got into something called the Computer Novel Construction Kit, which my brother downloaded for me, and it was basically a way of people that didn't have any programming experience beyond really basic stuff to create a text adventure. And I created a little text adventure that is now forever lost. But And this is a DOS program, you know. This is old. I can't remember when Computer Novel Construction Kit is. I should look up Moby Games. Let me just look this up because I think I should give you an idea of when this game was released. Well, this. Let's see if we can find out when this was done. Okay. Do we have it in here? Man, the new Moby Games is awful to search through. I'm sorry.
I know it really is terrible, but at least it works for you again.
Yeah, it actually works for me. Oh, it's not on here.
Hmm.
Probably let me Google for it. But yeah, so we're talking about this old DOS program that had like four colors. It wasn't a CJ palette. I'm pretty sure it was an EGA palette, but there we go. 1985. So it was before I was born.
Wow.
And I'll show you a little picture of what we're looking at here. So this is me building games. You know, and I love this. I loved it. Oh, here we go. This is... Oh, man, there's so much nostalgia here. I'd forgotten about this. So you know, we've got... It's definitely not a CGA palette. It's an EGA palette here. But, yeah, so you could build these adventure games, these little visual novels... Not visual novels. Interactive fiction games with this. And I really loved putting Easter eggs in games. I've always loved it. And... That was especially true here, where you'd have like really obscure verbs that you could hide in there, and you know, and just hint at. And I think only two or three people ever played my first game, but that doesn't matter. You know, I had a lot of fun making it, and it was a stepping stone. And I really miss some of the Easter eggs I could put in when I was building, you know, an adventure game with all these little hidden things. One thing about having a parser is you can have stuff, if you click on a hotspot with, especially with the two button interface that we're so fond of using now, you basically have no idea what the player's going to do with it when you click on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the old days, you had push, pull, open, close, pick up, all this different stuff, and you gave the exact command, whereas now you click on it, and if the thing needs to be pushed... then the player will push it. You know, in this day and age, you'd never get stuck on the cereal box in Monkey Island having to open it, you know, like I did back in the day, because I got stuck on that for a fair while.
So did I.
Yeah, obviously you open the cereal box, come on. But I got back in the day, I had, you know. So I think it really, we've streamlined the experience a lot. There's less of that element of exploration. I think we're focused more on storytelling than exploration in adventure games now. I don't think it's ever been truer because of how streamlined the interface is. And we've still got puzzles, but a lot of the stuff in the old days wasn't about just puzzles, you know. It was about exploration. And an obstacle doesn't have to be a puzzle, you know. Opening a cereal box is certainly not a puzzle, but it was one of the biggest obstacles in The Secret of Monkey Island for me. So I think... Yeah, we've lost something by taking away that sort of that thing. And I know people complained when the Quest for Glory one game was remade with a parser, that they've lost some of the interactivity with the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they remade it with a mouse cursor rather than a parser. And I can understand that, you know, you've lost something. Because it really is the ultimate system of interaction. If it wasn't for the fact that, you know, it's incredibly hard to guess what to do sometimes. There's the old guess the verb problem, you know, with parser games and with text adventures. But yeah, I haven't played a parser game for a long time. The last one you played was probably Conquest of Camelot, yeah?
Yeah.
How did you find that?
It was fine. The thing about certain Sierra games was that some of them, the parser was really simple, and other ones it was really complex. Like in Quest for Glory, you could tell people about stuff, ask about specific topics. Same with Conquest of the Longbow. There's one puzzle where you have to ask about certain goddesses to get information about them, and it's completely easy to just, you know, miss that because you're talking to the character. You just hit talk, and he says, "Oh, we can talk about these things." So you have to ask about them, and you have to because it serves as a puzzle later on in the game. And if you don't have the information, you're screwed. So I actually had to go back and restore a game and get that information when I played through it.
Save early, save often.
Yep. But what I was going to say was that I like I said before, I look at it from two perspectives, as a player and as a designer. As a player, I love having the freedom of a parser, and it really does, like you say, open up the world and make it a lot more interesting to explore and all that. But as a designer, just the sheer amount of programming that you have to do to anticipate what people will type, because I mean, doing a parser game is easy, but doing a parser game that's interesting is not easy. Because anybody can make a parser game, because, you know, I remember back before I found AGS, or around the same time I found AGS, there was this community that was making AGI games. Sure. And there were actually some really good ones. I played one called Tonight the Shrieking Corpses Bleed. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one.
I have heard of that one.
Yeah, you play as a garbage man and you fight zombies. It was really good. There was the Tex McPhillips series, which was hilariously politically incorrect and awful, but amazing. So those games were really good. I think they might have actually been made by the same guy, to be honest. But they were polished, and you know, there was very little instance of "I don't understand this" or "What do you mean by that" or whatever. Which it's really difficult to think about what the player might say and avoid having "I don't understand" that response. Because as a game designer, you want to make games interactive. We've had this conversation before where, you know, if you look at something, you don't want to say it's a door. Or if you have all these objects in a scene, you want there to be a response and not just "I can't do that" or whatever.
So in a parser, the point of interaction is to gain feedback, and if you're getting feedback that you're already aware of, it's not really feedback.
Exactly. So I think the parser interface makes that problem multiply, because you have to, you know, you don't just have an icon or a verb that you can think of a response. You know, like you have, let's say you have a stove or something in a kitchen, and you have the verbs. You know, you can think of things for open and close and push and pull if you want to just avoid the standard responses. Or if you just have the icon system, you know, the hand, you can have for talking to the stove or whatever. You can make a joke if you want or whatever. But then when you have a parser, what happens if, you know, the person types "stick head in oven" or "put hand on stove"? I mean, obviously you're going to have a really demented player, but at the same time, you know, you have to think about all these possibilities and what they might do and stuff like that. And it just seems overwhelming from a designer's point of view.
Okay, that's fair.
And it also seems like, I mean, obviously you're saying that exploration has kind of been put on the sideline in favor of story. But if you have a limited amount of, I don't want to say interaction because it's a completely different thing, but if you have a limited amount of ways you can interact with your world, it becomes a little bit easier to guide the player as far as what you want them to do. you know. I mean, because you can kind of give more of an idea of how to do things, if that makes any sense. Because, yeah. But, I mean, I enjoy playing text adventures, and I've enjoyed typing and stuff like that. And it's always fun when you type something unexpected and you get, you know, you type something that you figure, oh, there's not going to be a response for this, and you actually get one.
But yeah, like dance. A lot of the games had like dance and jump and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, or take off your clothes if you were a pervert. Yeah. And most Sierra games were like, this isn't Leisure Suit Larry. Or then you had Police Plus One AGI where you actually did and died of embarrassment, which was pretty funny. Of all the games to do that in, why Police Quest?
Yeah, man. You would think that that's the last game that they would do that in, because everything else was so serious about it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why. It was because Al Lowe was one of the programmers, so I'm sure he snuck that in for his own amusement.
Probably, that seems like it. Al Lowe, good on you, mate. I know you're listening.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that one's necessarily better than the other, but...
I think it's the same thing Andal recently posted in a thread, and he was talking about how when he started playing World of Warcraft, it was this whole idea of just being lost in this big wilderness, this big fantasy setting, and just walking around with having no real skills, you know, nothing. And these days, when you go to play Guild Wars 2 or something like that, all of the skills are shoved in your face, and it's instant gratification, and it misses that kind of exploration mode. I feel a little bit the same way about first-person shooters. Like I said, I recently finished Dark Forces. I love games like Strife, like Hexen. You know, all these old games are designed quite mazy. You get lost in these games, and you get lost a lot. And I play with the auto map on sometimes. You know, Redneck Rampage, I grew up playing Redneck Rampage. You get lost all the time in that. Even stuff like Doom and Duke Nukem are quite mazy. If you play like a modern, like id Software's Rage, if you play that, you don't get lost. Are you kidding me? It's impossible. You know, so the game world seems to be getting bigger and better, and yet we seem to get lost less and less. And I believe part of exploration is allowing yourself to get lost and feeling lost, because you're in a totally, you know, a totally different setting to a real world. So why shouldn't you feel lost at first? You know, when you play a Grand Theft Auto game at first, you instantly feel lost. I do. I walk into this big city and I go, oh man, I'm totally lost.
Yeah. Do you feel lost in Red Dead Redemption?
Yes. But Red Dead Redemption was great. I've got, you know, I love, well, that there you go. There's the thing about Red Dead Redemption. I love just being able to just go around and do my own thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a pity that I'm pretty much over Grand Theft Auto games, or I'd probably have Grand Theft Auto 5 by now.
Yeah, same. I was looking at the map of Grand Theft Auto 5, and it really interested me how the majority of the map actually isn't the city, it's country.
Yeah.
And there's actually a section that's based on the Salton Sea, which is pretty amusing to me. But yeah, just the idea that you can be in the city one second and then be out in this desert another, it's pretty cool. Or up the mountain or something like that, you know? It makes it a lot more appealing as a Grand Theft Auto game.
Yeah. I just have to say, you've looked at the map, you've looked at trailers, you've watched people play it, you've listened to the soundtrack. When are you just going to bite the bullet and buy the goddamn game?
I don't know. When it's cheaper. Maybe for Christmas. Who knows?
Because you seem pretty desperate to play it.
Listen, I'm just interested in it, that's all. I need to make an informed decision. And, well, I've pretty much already made the decision.
You're going to get Grand Theft Auto 5. There's no way you're not.
There's no question.
No question.
No question.
Boom, 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 boom.
By the way, if you haven't, go and play Bertha Butts Boogie, my very underrated Mags game that nobody played.
Boo-hoo.
Probably for good reason. But, no, that was good. That was good.
Do you want to, you know what I think you should do? You know what I think you should do? I think you should give away the game's secret here in the podcast so only our podcast listeners know it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you can press Control B to activate Super Butt Mode, and the ground shakes when she walks.
Yes, it does. Was that my suggestion?
It might have been. I don't remember.
I remember showing. Did I write code for that?
No, I did. Oh, no, no, you did. You did. You did.
I think I did.
Yeah, I think you may have, yeah. And then I implemented it and showed it to you, and you got all excited.
Of course I did. It's hilarious.
What a. Yeah. Yeah, so that's that.
I need to pour out some of my mixed nuts and dried fruits. This is a very healthy podcast. We promote healthy eating and drinking here. Anyway, let's talk about games.
Yeah. Let's talk about games. Let's talk about... I don't know if I should bring this subject up, because this is another subject we could talk about for a while, and we're already getting close to the hour mark. And,
who cares?
Okay. So, another thing that that I spoke about with Darth was protagonists, and how most adventure game protagonists are, you know, you expect them to be, like, outgoing kleptomaniacs. So when you get an adventure game character who's sort of not that mold, it can lead to kind of questioning, you know, their character or even how you feel about them. Like, for example, I remember when the first Blackwell Legacy came out. And
cool.
The first Blackwell Legacy. When the Blackwell Legacy, the first the Blackwell, only Blackwell game. Blackwell. Yes, the only Blackwell Legacy. When the first Blackwell game, the Blackwell Legacy, came out. Rosa was supposed to be sort of this introvert, socially awkward, you know, kind of nerd lady.
She is. Yeah.
She still is. She's come out of her shell since then, and that's, you know, her character development. But in the first game, one of the obstacles was that she couldn't bring herself to just go up and talk to Nishanti Sharma in the park. And I remember someone who will remain nameless, because let's not bring up old names, was angered by this and actually rage quit and was like, I don't want to play a game where the main character is, you know, too scared to talk to someone. What is that all about?
Yeah, man, so, my life is like that. Why wouldn't I? No, that my life's not like that at all.
Are you kidding me? You're...
what are you talking
to
say?
Everybody?
I sure do. Hello.
Yeah, so it's kind of difficult in an adventure game to make your character endearing if they have this sort of, I don't know. Darth was talking about a coward adventure game character that he cited. Okay. Roger Wilco, who's kind of, you know, presented as this sort of bumbling, I guess, coward, but he still does things that, you know, he's a space hero.
Sure. Well, even though the Threepwood is bumbling and incompetent and...
Yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah.
He gets by.
Yeah, because you do things for him.
That's right. Well, at least, you tell him to do things.
Right. Mm. And he mostly does them. I mean, he doesn't flat out. Mostly, yeah.
He won't touch the porcelain, though I've tried to make him about 100 times.
Yeah. So how do you think you overcome that? How do you overcome, or how do you present a character that's not the typical, you know, outgoing kleptomaniac, and how do you make them interesting without making the player hate them?
I don't think you can pander to the player 100% of the time, to be honest. You know, I think if you want to write a game with someone that's scared to talk to someone, go ahead. Just because one person doesn't like it, you know, you shouldn't. I don't think that should be the benchmark, like the thing that is, oh no, this is totally wrong because one person didn't like it. I thought that was a really fun part of the Blackwell Legacy. I kind of miss the old Rosa a little bit, you know?
Yeah, she wouldn't be very good at her job if she didn't talk to people, I think, though.
Yeah, true. She has turned into more of an investigative journalist, which she always sort of was, but...
Yeah.
But there are people really like that. There are people who really cannot go up to people and talk to them. It's a realistic character. It's way more believable than half of the crud we get lumped with in an adventure game. There's main characters.
That's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think you just... Players need time to give a character... They've got to get it right. I did not like Zoe Castillo at all. At all at the start of Dreamfall. I thought she was a spoiled, whiny teenager. Like, just a... You know, first... I really thought she was a sort of first world problems loser. You know? She was. She was just... She's like... Oh, nothing happened. It's so bad. I live in this amazing house in this amazing city, and my dad pays for everything. Oh, my life's so hard. You know, and I was just like, man, I don't want to play a whole game as this.
You know, I don't know. And then, hey, I at the end of the game, I really enjoyed Dreamfall, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, Zoe's character, and her character really grew on me. So, you know, I thought, if I can come back from that, you know, from First World Problems Girl, obviously Zoe grew as a character. That's part of the story, which is Zoe's development. But I think it's one of those scenarios where you have to give a character time to develop. Like with Rosa. Rosa's developed a long way from when she first began. And I would argue that all of the Black Worlds put together still wouldn't be as long as Dreamfall, The Longest Journey. Mm. On account of The Longest Journey being the Longest Journey game and then being like 1,000 years long.
Yeah.
Which is probably why they're called The Longest Journey.
Yeah.
You're typing totally. It's picked up on your microphone. That's hilarious.
Oh, sorry. I'm coding my game.
You are. But yeah, so I think you have to give a character time to grow. And if you as a player aren't allowed to do that, aren't allowing a character to develop and grow, and, you know, if you don't give them time to capture your attention, then why are you playing adventure games? Because adventure games are based on being patient, basically, and, you know, going slow. I love playing slow adventure games, just sort of muddling my way through, and, yeah. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
I think rage quitting an adventure game based on that, when you consider all of the other sins that adventure games can be guilty of, I think that's, yeah. I think, you know, get over it. You have to tell me who rage quit. I'm interested. I'm curious.
Okay, I will. Remind me after we finish the podcast. But another adventure game character who goes through a big change but who's pretty much detestable throughout the whole thing is our good friend Brian Basco from the Runaway games.
Well,
I mean, he's a nerd in the first part of the game, and I don't remember that he flat out refuses... Well, he flat out refuses to stick his hand in a trough of mud to pick up a wrench in a very annoying... But that's towards the end of the game when he's already going through his little transformation of cool guy. But, I hated him. Pretty much because of his voice acting, but that's...
Yeah, well, you see, I've mentioned on the podcast before when Captain Nemo loved Runaway. Loved it. And I'm going, man, how can you love this game? I'm like, how can you love it? And then he played the English version and went, what have they done to Brian? Oh, no, this is the worst game. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. So yeah, that was just another point that we discussed that was a point of thought.
Hmm. Good.
Yes.
Anything else to add?
Not really. Not on that subject.
Any new games been announced that you're excited about?
No, although I just read that Watch Dogs has been pushed back to 2014 now.
It sure has.
Which I guess is a good thing, because that's one less game that I have to worry about buying this year.
Mm. Did you hear about the Replay Games and what Paul Trow or whatever his name is did?
Oh, you mean the whole insulting the... Yeah, that
I was
that.
Away for a whole weekend and that wouldn't happen, so...
Yeah. You need to be here to keep the peace.
Here's the thing, man. Adventure game developers, I want you to listen to me right now. There are very few of us. Let's be nice to each other, okay?
Well, this goes back to our be nice to each other conversation in episode 16.
There are so very few of us when you really need to stick together. Let's be nice to each other.
Yeah. Don't be a dick. Isn't it interesting how Paul Trow's name kind of sounds like Paul Troll?
Yeah, and he's been a dick before. And, look, I don't want to say too much about it, but sometimes there's just stuff that you just don't do.
Yeah.
And common sense should tell you.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, common sense is one of the least common of the senses.
That's a nice saying, but I don't know how accurate it is. But common sense is pretty common, like, you know, do not hit your head against this window.
Oh, what? Ow! I got you.
You got problems.
I got me.
Yeah, that's all you got.
Loving is what I got.
I say remember that.
Yeah.
yeah, good. So, good. Yeah. So, at some point, I guess one of us is going to play Tomb Raider.
Yeah, probably.
At least, and one of us is going to play The Last of Us, at least.
Yeah. And one of us is going to play God of War Ascension.
Yeah. oh, man, I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about video games. This came up, because I go and work for a lot of different people, and this particular person, his father was wearing the sort of flip-flop sock combination, and I revealed that my brother and I used to do that as kids to turn our toes into, like, Ninja Turtle toes, you know.
Man, of course.
Mm. So I said, oh, man, that's what I used to do as a kid to make Ninja Turtle toes. And he said, oh, man, they used to have this Ninja Turtle arcade game in Albany where I lived as a kid. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, my God.
So we got talking about games and everything. And he was talking about how he liked old games better than new games. And I was like, this is my kind of guy. I was like, and I revealed, I was like, oh, yeah, man, I've still got games that run on 5 1/4-inch floppy disks.
Oh, yeah.
And he was
like, I know this story.
And he was like, oh, no, this isn't that story. And he was like, oh, what, on PC? And he was like, yeah, he was like, I've never seen a PC game before. And I was like, What?
What?
I said, so you've never played Doom? He's like, yeah, I've played Doom, but I didn't see what it came on. I didn't see the disc it came on. I'm like, well, it's like... I said, there's a few different formats, you know? But I was like, yeah, they had floppy discs. Some of the older, you know, ones had 5 1/4. Some had 3 1/2. You could get tape drives for your PC, but I'm a bit older. I don't have much experience with tape drives, so I can't comment on tape drives very much, but... Yeah, I was like, you can get them on CD, you can get them on DVD. A lot of it's digital download now. It's like, oh, yeah. And we were talking about old games and stuff like that, but it just blew me away. I was like, man, I have like 350, 400 PC games sitting on my shelf at home. And he's never seen one in his life. That kind of, you kind of assume that people of our generation have seen...
Well, how old is this guy?
Oh, he's older than me. I don't know about how much, but... I first met him when I was 18 because we played guitar. I played drums and he played guitar in a little project that we had going at one point. And I think he was 24 and I was 18 at that point. So, you know, he'd be in his 30s.
So he's basically my age because it'd be the same age difference between you and I.
And we were talking about games and he was naming games that I could recall. Like he said... He mentioned some factors. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Sim Farm. I remember playing Sim Farm. Did you ever play Sim Farm?
No.
No, man, Sim Farm was awesome. and, yeah, we were talking about various different games that... Because, you know, I know a fair few of the games, and so he'd mentioned bits about them, and I remember what they are based on that.
Okay.
And, yeah. But just, it blew me away that someone had not...
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. So there you go.
Well, to be fair, he grew up in Albany.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
But he had a PlayStation 1, and he had Xbox, and he had Super Nintendo and Nintendo. He didn't live under a goddamn rock, yeah.
No, he was just a console kid.
But as you said, his parents never had a computer, because, you know, they're not that sort of person. They're not, you know.
Right, right.
Not everyone buys a PC, so, yeah.
Sure. Now,
I know enough about old PlayStation 1 games. So I know nothing about Nintendo games, but... I got a little collection of PlayStation 1 games myself, so, you know.
Well, the story I thought you were going to tell, which I think you should tell, is the one about the gaming your new gaming PC.
Yeah, we can talk about that later. We've enough stories for one podcast, I think.
Fair enough. People like backstory, apparently.
Yeah, they do. Hi, Baron.
But this podcast has been especially backstory-full. I feel like we're the old grandpas and we've had all the children on our knees. My knees are getting
sipping lemonade.
My knees are getting tired. I don't know about yours.
I'm worried about the kids sitting on your knees because you quite clearly removed your pants at the beginning of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, you weren't wearing any to begin with, so.
But nobody knew that until just now.
Until you pointed it out. You said at the beginning you weren't wearing any, which is what prompted me to take my... Oh, that sounds wrong.
That is overshare.
But for them, maybe. All right, dear listeners, this has been our podcast. If you still want to listen to us, go right ahead. And
what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. Follow us on Twitter or something.
You are at Grunders Love Games, and I am at Ben_304. Good night.
Yes, good night.